I've been working with a nurse dietitian for the last 6 months, and it's been life-changing. I've lost weight, healed my relationship with food, and have way more energy. Working with a dietitian online to create a personalized nutrition plan was so easy thanks to Nourish. The best part? I pay $0 out of pocket because Nourish accepts hundreds of insurance plans. 94% of patients pay $0 out of pocket. Find your dietitian at usenourish.com. That's usenourish.com.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out, procrastination, putting it off, kicking the can down the road. In, plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out, carpet in the bathroom. Like, why? In, knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
This season, let your shoes do the talking. Designer Shoe Warehouse is packed with fresh styles that speak to your whole vibe without saying a word. From cool sneakers that look good with everything to easy sandals you'll want to wear on repeat, DSW has you covered. Find a shoe for every you from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, New Balance, and more. Head to your DSW store or visit DSW.com today.
McMonagle here with you on The Fan on this Thursday morning, 2:02 to be precise. I got you for the next 3 hours, all the way till 5 o'clock in the warm-up show, 888-808-1019. We got Fleegs on the other side, and we'll get to the New York Knicks. We'll get to the football conversation, but we're in baseball season, baby. And Pete Alonso saves the Mets yet again. Mr. Clutch, oh, he needed that. That's right, Sal, I want all that smoke. 888-808-1019. And yes, Pete Alonso, in what has been a complete reversal so far early on in this year, of all the talk of last year and his inability to come through in the clutch and his inability to carry the team, as clearly we're seeing the same thing from Lindor. We have all the issues that are surrounding Vientos. Obviously off to a good start, off to a start of, you know, getting on base, but really haven't seen that other than the long home run and a couple of, you know, good at bats where he'd get walks in big spots. Soto hasn't necessarily come through in big spots either. And right now, if you watch that game yesterday for the New York Mets, if they lose that game, like, Pete Alonso saved what would be the next 2 days of just absolute, and I know it's overreaction. This is what we do early on in the season, right? We're going to overreact to what the Yankees did last night. We overreacted, me and, Fleegs, he was off out in Miami. We were just talking about it before we came back on here, how ridiculous all the talk was about the stupid torpedo bats. We don't have to worry about that anymore now that they can't. It doesn't matter what bat you're swinging if you can't make contact. So we'll get to the Yankees in just a minute. But I know we overreact and we go crazy, and that's what we do here. I understand. It's a 162-game season of one-game seasons every single night. But the way this team has performed offensively to start the year, and then watching this team play yesterday, and just a lifeless, ugly game where Vientos, coming off a day where he didn't run the first in the second game of this series, didn't hustle out of the box, was talked to by his teammates and his head coach, and his manager, and all the narrative around that, and understood, and it won't happen again, and he follows it up with just ridiculously awful defensive plays, whether it's, you know, coming home in the third inning and putting his starting pitcher, Clay Holmes, we'll get to here, in a real bad predicament, throwing the ball over the catcher's head, or, you know, playing a fair ball into a base hit with a runner at third. Everything that went on there, the inconsistency of the bats, what we're seeing from Beatty, what we're seeing from Lindor, what we're seeing from up and down the lineup. This was a dead-looking offense that the Met fan is all over already, because it's supposed to be the driving force of the team, right? The bullpen's been pretty good. The rotation's been better than expected. Clay Holmes hasn't been the ace, maybe, that he looked like in spring. But ultimately, he's been keeping you in games and pitching fairly well. McGill had a great start. Griffin Canning had a great start. You're feeling, you know, very good about where this rotation is, and yet you're not winning at the clip you expected, you know, six games in, because the offense hasn't been what it's supposed to be. And in this game, even the defense, you got Taylor out in the outfield, center field, turning a, you know, an out into a base hit, letting bases loaded in the third inning. Vientos, like we said, and the storyline was going to be, if they lose this game down 4-1 in the eighth inning, right? Forget the grand slam the other night. This is the home run from Pete Alonso, because if you head into the off day, getting ready for home opener Friday, and I understand everyone's going to be pumped, it's the home opener, but for 2 days leading into that, we would be talking about how lifeless this offense is. We would be talking about Vientos and his defense and the underwhelming start to the year of such a promising season for Vientos, and what we expect from him and what year two is supposed to look like from him, and how Soto was supposed to uplift this offense into something special, like close to or next to the Dodgers, who have yet to lose a game, watching the Braves just completely crap themselves and have yet to get a victory on this season. But they're supposed to be that next best team, or at least right in that mix, and the offense has come out of the season just awful. We got the conversation around Beatty. We got the conversation around Vientos. We have the conversation about the early struggles of Lindor. We've got, like, it's that would be the talk of the next 2 days. And instead, the New York Mets rally, and Pete Alonso has a terrific at bat where he's fouling off tough pitch after tough pitch, and then gets a fastball in the outside corner and absolutely hits a unbelievable smoked line drive to slightly right center field for a game-tying home run, which also lends itself to what you see from the bullpen and Buddo and making plays at home plate, right? And even Beatty making a throw that looked like it was a run at the plate, but making enough of a play to get the out with further replay and to get out of a jam with a runner at third and less than two outs in the bottom of the 10th inning. And everything that now we feel good about, oh, the difference between 3-3 and 2-4 after the opening road trip and heading home, it's enormous and all that. And now we're talking about how good Pete Alonso is and how much he can matter hitting behind Juan Soto and the powerful nature of him and, you know, breaking Daryl Strawberry's record, and just how different he feels already, the body language. These two home runs have been, without question, the two biggest hits of the early Mets season, and they've come from a guy who last year had what felt like none of it up until the postseason. And I don't know if that home run has released him and gotten the monkey off his back, and he's not worried about it as much, or it's the second year now, because let's be honest, he's still, you know, this is another 1 year contract. This is another make it or break it season for Pete Alonso. This is what we thought he struggled with mightily last year, you know, particularly obviously just with his offensive struggles, and then the way he handled it, the way he talked about it, you know, the idea of, you know, a little after the All-Star break, when asked questions about it, he's given his resume about how many home runs he hits and, you know, the fact that he was an All-Star. And you could just tell, as he's given his resume of a free agent, you could tell how much it was weighing on him. And this year he got his money, at least for 1 year. He's the highest paid first baseman in the league. He's making good defensive plays. And he is so far, I mean, let's be honest, I got to tell you, I this is what we do. We would be taking phone calls, and we will, at 888-808-1019, about how lifeless the Mets look. And the real issue right now with Mark Vientos, and it's a handful of games in, but what we've seen from him already this early season is frustrating, right? And he doesn't run the ball out the other day, and he's called to the carpet for it, right? He admitted that both Lindor and his manager came to speak to him, told him it can't happen again. And of course, that's completely un-Yankee-like. I'm sure nobody ever talked to Gleyber Torres, but I just have to throw it in there. What are you going to do? I'm the Yankee shill. But they talk to him, and he comes out and has a miserable defensive game. Miserable defensive game. And if Pete Alonso doesn't hit that home run and they go meekly and lose 2 out of 3 to Miami, who's gotten off to a fairly good start here, but lose 2 out of 3 to Miami heading home, like, there would be a lot of pressure to get rolling at home this Friday against the Blue Jays. Like, there would be a lot of pressure off of losing 2 out of 3 in the opening series and then losing 2 out of 3 to Miami, which we talk about how important it is to win all these games. Yes, it's only 6 games in. Yes, it's only, you know, the beginning of the season. You expect the offense to turn around, and I still do. And they did enough in this game to win, obviously. But when you're playing Miami and you're looking at the division you're in, and I know that we'll get to the Atlanta Braves and their 0-7 start and the ramifications of that and what other teams have done historically when starting 0-7 after getting walked off last night by Ohtani. But you're in a division with the Braves. You're in a division with the Philadelphia Phillies, right? And an up-and-coming, young, talented Washington team that might be a year away but is going to be better this season. And when you play the Marlins, we talked about this a lot yesterday, when you play the Marlins, I can tell you as a Yankee fan, there's at least 3 or 4 years in the last 6 or 7 that were directly, the division was directly correlated on how you beat up the Baltimore Orioles. I know the Orioles are in a different spot now. The last couple of years they've been good. But there was a stretch where the Orioles were the dregs of baseball, losing 100 games a year. And the division winner between the Rays, the Red Sox, the Yankees, so much of it was predicated on how they beat up the Orioles. One team would go, you know, 15-4, and the other team would go 9-10 or 10-9, and that would be the difference in a division. So when you're playing a team like Miami, who we expect to lose close to 100 games, even though it's early on in the year, even though we can, you know, move on from it, you got to take these series, and you can't go into Miami after losing the first series of the year against the Houston Astros and go into your worst, the worst team in your division that you have to beat up on, especially in a tough division like the NL East, and to come out losing that game with the offense looking the way it's looking, with the defense looking the way it was looking. This would have been a really tough spot for the Mets early on, as tough a spot as you could be in heading to opening day. And instead, Pete Alonso at it again. Right? It was just a couple of days ago that Sal, yes, you, Sal, and everybody else was complaining about him hitting third, the body language, and everything else. And over the last couple of days, Pete Alonso has completely saved the Mets, and he is poised. And, you know, look, I understand. I heard a caller as I was listening, you know, to Keith at the end of the show talking about Juan Soto's struggles here, which is laughable. I mean, this is where we are. Juan Soto's struggles. Guy's got a 900 OPS through the first 6 games, but his struggles. And he hasn't had many impact at-bats. You know, he's gotten on base, but we all know what he's going to be. And hitting behind him is such a big conversation, and we talk about it all the time. And Pete Alonso hitting behind Juan Soto, I think, is primed for an enormous season. And then the other element of it, and I know it's early on and we don't want to talk about this too much, but prepare to say goodbye. Like, every time he hits a home run like this, I can't help myself. Because when I think of how Stearns operates, and we'll get into all the different things about, you know, Sandy Alcantara and the idea of trading for him, and the Mets were obviously open about it, and we know how this roster is put together, and we understand, you know, the free agents hitting the market next year, and we understand what the process was this past season for the Mets with Pete Alonso, who didn't have to deal with what every other team had to deal with, the qualifying offer and the picks attached to signing Pete Alonso, and they still struggled with the idea of bringing him back with no real better solution. Next year, there could be better solutions, more teams viable to be in the game without having to lose picks to sign Pete Alonso. And every time he hits a big home run, and every time he comes through, I just keep thinking, like, this could be his last season as a Met, and he wants to make it count. And right now, to start the year, he has been the most clutch, the most productive, and has saved the Met bacon on 2 separate occasions. And yesterday, saved them from sleepwalking through a lousy Marlins team and losing 2 out of 3. And everybody questioning the toughness and grittiness of this Met team, the defense of this Met team, and wondering whether Vientos is still the guy he was last year and how soon before we pull the plug on Beatty and everything like that. But instead, we're talking about a rousing win, incredible home run, the bullpen getting you out of jam after jam and extra innings and finding a way to come through and win a baseball game. And that is so much more of a fun conversation for the Met fans heading into Friday than what could have been all day today, talking about a lifeless, listless performance from the New York Mets, much like you got from the New York Yankees. But I also want to talk about Clay Holmes in this, because before we get to the Yankees, because I thought, you know, as we talk about this rotation and how impressed I've been with it to start the year, and it's only once through. And I've talked a lot about how we expect too much from Clay Holmes coming off in a really good spring and what we saw from his first start. I got to tell you again, yes, he didn't get deep into games this game. Yes, he wasn't overpowering. But I thought, like, when you look at it, Clay Holmes, who I've had concerns about making this transition to the starting pitcher, just for a bunch of different reasons, even just now this is his second start, and what do you do in between those 5 days? And this is something he hasn't done in 6 years. Like, he's an everyday pitcher for 6 years. He's a guy, and especially a sinker baller, who when they don't throw, what do we hear? You watch baseball like I do. What do we hear every time a sinker baller comes in as a reliever who hasn't pitched in 3-4 days? It's, oh, you know, he's a little strong. You know, the sinker's probably coming out a little hot, not having its movement. He's throwing it too hard. He's a bit strong. We've heard that forever about all different kinds of sinker pitchers. So the idea that he's coming in, hasn't thrown for 5 or 6, 7 days as it was with all the off days to start the year, like, this is all new to him. And for him to come in and have his defense, much like with the Yankees last year, and I screamed over and over to every Yankee fan about how Clay Holmes is better than his numbers present, because the defense behind him is bad, the shifting behind him is bad, you know, the bad luck on little soft ground balls are, you know, crippling him. Even when he makes his pitch, he can be beat. I've been talking about this forever. And you go through that inning, in the third inning with Clay Holmes, and he gets into a situation that he puts himself in, but then he gets a fly ball to center that's turned into a base hit. Then he gets the ground ball after a sacrifice fly to Vientos, who throws it home, and yet Clay Holmes settles in. Clay Holmes does not implode. Clay Holmes figures out a way to get through that inning, get through 4 2/3, and give you a representative start. I know it hasn't been what we thought, maybe. I know Met fans had bought into this idea that the Mets pitching lab was going to turn him into an ace, and he had this incredible spring training, and that kick change, and he had a .83 whip in spring, and, you know, I got calls that, you know, Clay Holmes is going to win the Cy Young, and plus the extra added element of it being, you know, sticking it to the Yankees. The Met fan had relished the idea of him off to this incredible start and being one of the best pitchers in baseball because of his spring. That was always fool's gold. It's going to be a transition. It's going to take some time. And despite we haven't seen him on the top of his game, I think he's been really resilient. And some of the fears I had about him making this transition, I've actually felt pretty good about the way Clay Holmes has thrown the ball. And I felt pretty good about the way he's come through big. I mean, because we've seen it time and time again with the Yankees. And maybe this is a benefit to him because he's never had the rope, right? As a closer, you know, you let a fly ball in center field lands, a third baseman throws it over the catcher's head, that's it. You're walking off the mound a loser, and everybody claiming, well, you know, that's what the problem is when you have a closer who relies on contact. But instead, he's a starting pitcher. He can get through that inning, limit the damage, and live to fight another inning. And I've been really impressed with him. So for me, Clay Holmes was a big talking point of this game. Vientos and his defense and what we're seeing from him and his body language and not running out the ground ball, that's clearly a talking point. But we start this morning at 888-808-1019 talking about Pete Alonso, yet again, saving the Mets with an enormous home run off a great at-bat, making foul, you know, swinging a tough, you know, breaking balls in the dirt, figuring out a way to extend that bat, looking for that fastball, which is what he's been doing. I think, you know, pitchers are going to have to start making the adjustment, because you look from that home run against Devin Williams in the playoffs on, Pete Alonso almost exclusively is looking for fastballs out over the plate to drive to center field and right center, because that's, he has the ability to do it. He has the power to do it. And if he can get those arms extended, it doesn't matter what ballpark or what direction the ball is going, he's powerful enough to hit this ball out. And that's where he's at his best. And right now, I would be terrified to throw Pete Alonso an outside fastball, because it feels like he's looking for it exclusively. Right? Much like Suarez was looking for that freaking pitch from Mark Leiter, and Mark Leiter gave it to him, the split finger. You cannot throw Pete Alonso in a tough at bat with runners on an outside fastball, because that's where he's looking to go. He got it yesterday. He did not miss it. And he saved the Mets from a conversation about the lifeless, disgusting, now all of a sudden terrible defensively, right? We saw even Juan Soto, who's been okay for the Mets so far defensively, on a single that scores a run, kind of boots it. Center field and Taylor lets a ball drop. Vientos throws one over home. Vientos plays a easy ground ball on the foul line. into a run and a single, like, just did not look good at all in this game. And it felt like the Mets were about to have an ugly, sloppy, lifeless, no offense, tough loss to the Miami Marlins. And instead, Pete Alonso showed up, hit an enormous home run. The bullpen and Buddo continue to do what they've done all year. And they find a way to win this game, this series, get back to 500, and head home for the opener where everybody's excited, everybody's ready to go. Hopefully the weather's nice, and we'll get this season underway. We'll get to the Yankees next at 888-808-1019. Carlos Rodon and his early struggles. And to me, again, much like Clay Holmes, I got a different opinion than a lot of people think. What I've heard about Carlos Rodon in this start last night. But the Yankee bats with 16 strikeouts, losing their first series of the year. We'll look tomorrow to Cookie Carrasco to make sure they don't get swept and finish this homestand 3-3, which would be extremely disappointing after all the home runs off the torpedo bats in the first three against Milwaukee. So a little baseball to get us started. We'll talk about the New York Knicks and what we can try and take from their first half and then ultimate blowout loss from the Cavaliers.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing.
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on sports networks. Availability varies by zip code and package. New customers. Service renews monthly unless you cancel. Choice package required. Restrictions apply.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover, all for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code MAN at checkout. That's harrys.com, code MAN. Enjoy!
Instacart is on a mission to have you not leave the couch this basketball season. Because between the pregame rituals and the postgame interviews, it can be difficult to find time for everything else. So let Instacart take care of your game day snacks or weekly restocks and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Because we hear it's bad luck to be hungry on game day. So download the Instacart app today and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three orders. Service fees apply for three orders in 14 days. Excludes restaurants.
Lynn likes the open floor, spinning, puts it up, and banks it in. Yes. Sensational play for Jeremy Lin.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Lin's sanity continues here in Madison Square Garden.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the Free Odyssey app.
All right, 226 on The Fan. McMonagle here with you. Got you for another couple hours as we take you to 5 o'clock in the warm-up show. Lin Sanity in the promo. OG kind of on a Linsanity offensive run. I know it didn't go great in the second half for him, but what do you have, 19 in the first half? I mean, and he was hitting everything, and he was getting to the... Did you see, and they were going nuts about it on the broadcast, because absolutely true. I mean, he went to the basket, had a Euro step. I mean, he had a move I didn't think OG was capable of. What we have seen from OG offensively over the last, I don't know, 7, 8 to 10 games without Jalen Brunson has been incredible. Now, we'll get to the Knicks and whether you can take anything out of this loss to Cleveland. And I talked about this last night. Me and Boyle did a little bit on it. Like, I don't. I'll get to it. I don't take much out of this loss, man. Like, I heard Sal say that this is a good but bored team. Or was it Giannotti who said that? One of them. I kind of agree with that. They're waiting for their captain to come back. It was amazing that they had the run they did. They're not, without Brunson, they're not, you know, up to the task of taking on the Cleveland Cavaliers. I don't know how much I can take for anything the rest of the year. They need their guy back. I'm more positive about OG playing the way he's played, and hopefully he could be an offensive guy than I am necessarily down on a blowout loss again. And look, defensively, same crap. I get it. You know, dropping back on screens and all the stuff that cost them against these better teams and certainly against Cleveland and Boston. But I have a tough time. It's at the point where they're locked into the three. They know it. We know it. We all know it. And defensively, they've actually been better. They showed the stat last night, or 2 nights ago, rather. You know, the last 10 games or so, they're fifth best defensive team in the league. Like, they've been getting better defensively, believe it or not. A lot of it is the opponents they've played. But we all know what the issue is. We all know what we're waiting for. And hopefully he's back on Sunday, and this team and Brunson has enough time to get it together as they head into the playoffs. But I have a real tough time giving a damn. I got to be honest with you. I have a real tough time looking at that game and saying, "Oop, more reinforcement that they can't beat good teams." They don't have their team. So we'll get to that in a little bit as well. But I want to start with the baseball. We started with, obviously, Alonso, the home run, the big win for the Mets, the issues with Vientos, and we'll transition into the Yankees as well, who had a miserable night themselves. We'll get to that next. 888-808-1019. Mike in Brooklyn is on the fan, though. What's up, Mike?
What's going on, brother man? How are you tonight?
What's up? How are you?
All we need is 154 wins, man, and Dodgers are the undefeated team.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what were they down 5-0 in this game last night, and they come back?
I
walk off home run.
Yep, I text Rami. If they were down 5-0, I'm like, Dodgers are winning this game, and he goes, yeah, maybe. Their lineup is fantastic. Yeah. Their bullpen is fantastic.
Their rotation's fantastic. Yeah. Their bench is fantastic. You know,
everything.
I mean, are completely. I heard a call with Keith just before wishing the Yankees were the Dodgers, and I appreciate. I don't know if anyone's ever been the Dodgers like this. Like even the Yankees in their heyday, I don't know if they put together something that like the Dodgers have put together here. I've talked about this. It's the Ohtani contract. It's what's really allowed it. They've been good for a long time. They've won a lot of divisions. It's not like they haven't been a great team who's invested. They had Mookie Betts. They had Freddie Freeman before Ohtani ever got there. But that Ohtani contract has allowed them to now corner the market on Japanese players, as well as give contracts and just feel like we're making so much money with Ohtani. Who knows what the next collective bargaining agreement is going to look like and if we're going to be allowed to do this. Like, let's just throw all the money into it as we can, try and win a championship two over the next couple of years, be a dynasty here, and then reassess. Or maybe there's been whispers of selling the team. Like, I don't know what their plan is, but right now, that contract has afforded them to build a super team, which I don't really steal a take from Evan. This has kind of been my take on the Dodgers all year, and I heard Evan say it again today. I'm not necessarily rooting for them to win all these games or go 162-0, but I'm telling you, they are going to have an incredible regular season, and they are going to have a really fun blowout in the postseason.
Agreed.
I picked them to win the World Series. I know that because I just felt like if I have to, like, I made a decision when I did my picks this year. I could do with what I think is going to happen and what is obviously on board with what's happening, or I could have a little fun. I mean, I think we all know they're the best team, and it's hard to imagine it, but like, I just have this, you know, Like, something's going to happen along the way. And it's going to be fun to root against it at the very least. Like, we're all going to be... Like, I know Tommy Lugauer talked a lot about being a Met fan, and his second favorite team was whoever's playing the Yankees. That is going to be everybody in baseball. Your favorite team is going to be whatever your favorite team is, and your second favorite team is going to be whoever's playing the Dodgers, because who the hell wants to see them win a championship?
Before, I know I got to be on this point, but a quick point before that. I think the Mets are the problem is in that East, that I think whoever wins that East is going to be the only team out of that division to make it to the playoffs. I think the Central and the West are very strong this year, but we'll see.
The NL Central?
I think the NL Central and the NL East are going to, I mean the NL West, are going to have multiple teams, where the NL East, I think, is only going to have one team. I think whoever wins the division is going to be the only team from the,
The West, no, the West is really good. The West is really good. I don't know if I agree with you on the Central. I'd be surprised if the Mets and Phillies aren't in the playoffs.
We'll see. But the last point, Vientos, the only thing, I didn't hear too much last night. I know you were just talking about it before on, you know, before you went to break or whatever, but the whole thing with Vientos, I was literally, I was a little, not disenfranchised, but I was a little pissed off at that they didn't sit Vientos today. I'm like, come on, this is a kid who had one good year, right? Who knows? This kid could be back in the minors by May 1st, right? He had one good year. The guy does not run out the ball to first yesterday, and he's looked like crap hitting. He's looked like crap in the field.
Yep.
So, I don't know. I don't understand.
I disagree with you, Mike. I appreciate it, and thank you for the call. I don't agree. They talked to him. He admitted they talked to him. He said Lindor, the captain of the team, talked to him. The manager talked to him. Like, I don't think they had to sit him. If it progresses, I suppose. I mean, these were mental and physical errors that he made on the field in the game yesterday. The not running it out, nobody likes to see it. It's a bad look, right? It was a bad look for Gleyber Torres' whole career. And I'm sure, not to get into it, I'm sure the Yankees talked to him. I find it impossible, because remember when he did get benched, they had the audio, like, he was benched from the dugout, and he's arguing with Boone, and you could literally see Boone's mouth say, I told you. Like, some guys just struggle with it. Now, Vientos isn't there yet. As far as I remember, like, and again, I watch every game, but I might not follow it as closely. I don't remember, and I wouldn't feel as strong about it, my point being, as a Met fan would. I don't remember him having any lackadaisical issues. Last year, it felt like he was a man on a mission. Right? He was pissed off at the beginning of the year when J.D. Martinez was signed and he was sent down to the minors. He came up, hit pretty well, was sent back down again, mashed in AAA, came back up and just was a force. And it felt like he was on a mission. It felt like he was on a mission to prove himself. And even through the playoffs, how great was he in the playoffs? So, like, I haven't noticed any of this stuff yet. Even defensively, early on in this year, I thought he made a couple of good plays with his glove. These were mental errors and throwing errors. He's still kind of okay with his glove, and better than he was a couple of years ago when he was up and down. But, like, I don't know if he needs to be benched just yet. I don't want to do that to him. I don't want to knock his confidence right now, because I think part of it is he doesn't look very confident right now. He's off to a slow start. It's a big year to prove yourself. Like you said, he's done it for 1 year. That's not enough. He's still in prove-it mode. Last year, he thrived under that mode. I would like to keep him in that mode. But I also don't know if benching him is the right thing. Like, I think they talked to him. I don't know what else you got to do. Like, I think we overreact to this. Everyone wants held accountable, and everybody wants to see this discipline, and everybody wants to, you know, treat the Mets and Yankees like they're a little league team, like you're coaching them, and I would put that kid in his place. Like, stop. These are grown men. These are professional athletes. He's making, you know, not a ton of money like we've seen other contracts be given out over the last. I guess people are really concerned. You know how you want to know what's a good sign that there's going to be an issue with the collective bargaining agreement? Look at all the contracts that were handed out over the Marte, like all these contracts that were just given out. Merrill in San Diego. Like they're all good contracts. The Merrill one in particular, I think he's going to be an absolute superstar. So, but it's just funny that it all happened around the same time as we're talking about collective bargaining coming up and the Dodgers. But I don't know if benching him's the right thing to do. He's got to play through it. And you trust him to be a good offensive player. He's a big part of the team. Like, you want him to be that superstar. You don't have to go spend money. You go find yourself this core, team. The owner talked about it in this offseason about how you don't really want to have a lot of, high priced long term contracts. I think he could be slow playing that, but it's not faulty thinking. You don't want a lot of those kind of contracts. You want to have your youth. Like, if Vientos isn't the player he was last year, and next year you don't have confidence in that, that's a big hit to the future structure of this team. That's a big hit to the big, belief that we have in what this team's going to be for the next handful of years. Part of that, what all the Met fans were peacocking about in this offseason, signing Juan Soto and how much better they are situated than the Yankees and how good they look for the future. Part of that is a 40 home run caliber hitter at, 26, 20, 27 years old at third base. Like, that's part of the future plans of this team being a dynamo. If that's not an answer, if Vientos isn't that player, which, again, I think this is a bit premature, six games in, but he had an awful game, he hasn't hit, and he did have a lackadaisical issue. But if he's not that guy, the Mets' future isn't nearly as bright. I mean, it's still bright. You have the money to cover it up. Going into last year, you weren't even sure he was a player at all. So it's not like, I'm not saying the Mets are doomed. I'm just saying that part of the reason there was such a special nature to last year was Vientos emerged as a young superstar. And into the postseason, a young superstar. He's got to be that to have that same feel about the future prospects of this team. And right now, six games in, which is extremely early, but we've seen him not hit. We've seen him not run out of ground ball and letting his frustrations take hold. And in this game in particular, defensively, I mean, he makes two of the throw home is a mile in the air in the third inning. And then he played a ground ball that was probably going foul. And let's be totally honest, I was flipping around. I watched it a bunch of times. I'm still yet to see a highlight where I'm sure that ball's even fair. But you can't field it the way he did. First of all, he also went into foul territory, which I thought created maybe like a dynamic for the umpire. His body's in foul, but he's reaching towards fair. So it made it look, I know this is probably silly, but I was trying to think on it as I'm waiting for the like definitive replay down the line to show me whether it was fair or foul. But I'm like, maybe he pulled a little bit of an optical illusion on the umpire because his entire body was in foul territory and he had to reach towards fair territory to make the play. But you've got to feel that with a sense of, if you're going to field it and play it, you got to field it and play it with urgency. And instead he did it very lackadaisical. Then he realized he couldn't go home and he threw a ball way too late and way too high. He's lucky Pete made the catch at first base. So he's played terribly here. He has not hit. He looks frustrated. He looks like he's moping a little bit. He looks like he's got that body language that the Yankee fans know very well from Gleyber Torres and from Gary Sanchez. And it's been a rough go of him. And I'm telling you right now, this is mild. I know the first call of the night from Mike was about it, but this is going to be a mild take on Vientos because of Pete Alonso. Vientos owes Pete a little bit of a pat on the back or, a steak dinner because Pete's home run and winning that game has eliminated the talk of Vientos. If they lose that game and they go meekly into the night, don't score any runs, lose 4-1, and Vientos is responsible for two of the four runs defensively after not running out to first base, the conversation around Vientos would be a lot louder heading into opening day on Friday. But Pete Alonso comes through with the big home run. The Mets get the win. The bullpen gets out of jams. They make plays defensively at the plate two different times. Vientos does hit the ground ball that is misplayed by the shortstop that leads to the game-winning run. And everybody feels a hell of a lot better. You wipe away. It's a nothing start. You're beginning all over again. You're 3-3 for the first six-game road trip. You can live with a five-game road trip to start the year. A 500 six-game road trip to start the year. No big deal. Alonso's come through. Everyone's going to get to see Juan Soto on Friday in a Met uniform. He's off to a fairly good start, although not being a world-beating start. And to me, the starting pitching, which is the biggest question mark of this team, has been good. Even Clay Holmes, Like, even Clay Holmes, I was impressed with Clay yesterday. I got to be honest with you. I was impressed with him because we've seen it fall. We've seen it unravel, right? We're Met fans have seen it too. Like, but Yankee fans particularly, like, we've seen it, watching it. He unravels. That's the issue with Clay a lot. And I thought the way his defense let him down in that inning, we were about to see him unraveling. He gets that play, right? The fly ball to right that absolutely should have been caught from Taylor. And then the Vientos play. And then he gets two strikeouts to end the inning. I thought it was a really good bounce back performance from Clay. I thought his defense let him down and he didn't break. Yeah, he's not gotten deep into games yet. You're not even sure how many innings he's going to give you on the season. So I've been impressed with the starting rotation. I've been impressed with Clay Holmes. And I think that's the biggest question mark of the team because the offense isn't. Like, it just isn't. It may become that way. And I know Met fans, you know, are worried about it because it's been that way. You know, the years where they've had down years, it's because the offense hasn't hit. And we've seen some of these guys go through that. And Lindor struggles in April. And, you know, Nimmo hot and cold. And Alonso unable to come through in the clutch. And all the other narratives around this team over the last few years. This offense is pretty loaded. Like, I still feel pretty good about it. I mean, we're 6 days in. We can have a conversation about Vientos, but I think we're a long way off before really being concerned about a sophomore slump just yet. And I still expect, you know, obviously Alonso's off to a good start. We know what Soto's going to be. Lindor's going to have a great year. He's just going to. It's just a matter of when it gets kicked into high gear. I don't think there's any doubt about this team offensively. Will it be as great as we had hoped? Maybe not, but it's going to be solid. And it's going to be one of the better units on the team, if not the best unit on the team, by the end of the year. So the question for me is, what everyone questions, as we got the news yesterday of Manaea missing, or 2 days ago, whenever it was, missing time, now that he's re-injured the oblique and he's being shut down for 2 weeks, and we'll probably see it, hopefully, by June 1st, right? Eventually, in the next few days, or next week or two, you're going to have to go into a six-man rotation, if that's still your plan with Kodai Senga. And right now, I haven't heard anything on Paul Blackburn's knee, but hopefully he can be ready to join the rotation. So to me, the rotation is in flux. The rotation is the thing I'm worried about. The rotation is the biggest question mark for this Met team. And so far, with the way McGill threw, the way Peterson threw, the way Griffin Canning threw, and even Clay Holmes only going 4 2/3 in both these starts, I still feel like you've gotten pretty good performances from him. And he threw a couple of changeups in this game that were devastating and got a couple swing and misses on him. So like, he's rounding into shape. I've actually think it's been a positive first two starts for Clay Holmes. And the Mets are able to put all that together, go 500, head home and get ready to take on the world with everybody fully expecting a big crowd. Obviously, all the ticket sales, all the expectations, Juan Soto, everything coming into Friday should be fun. 888-808-1019. We can get into the Yankees here now, too, because obviously the Yankees have a bitter 4-3 loss to the Arizona Diamondbacks. They've now lost the first two games of this series, trying to avoid the sweep later today with Cookie Carrasco on the mound. And obviously it sucks coming off the three games in against Milwaukee and the way this team hit. And I know everyone's going to go ahead and call me. You can at 888-808-1019. What about this offense now? You put out that video, the Yankees are back. Are they back now? All of you missed the point of that. My point was, is we're being ridiculous. My point was, is that nobody expects this Yankee team to hit this many home runs consistently. And after 3 days, you all went nuts and had to call them cheaters because they were hitting home runs. I don't think anyone's accusing them of cheating through the first couple games of this series. Like, it wasn't that the Yankees are world beaters. I never expected the offense to do what it did, but the reaction, because the Yankees had a bat that looked slightly different, which you wouldn't even recognize if the team didn't bring attention to it, the broadcast didn't bring attention to it, which the proof is they've been using it already and nobody knew. Giancarlo Stanton went through the whole postseason using it and nobody knew. But you knew this offense was going to – we're worried about this offense, and clearly they struck out 16 times last night. That's more than any game they had at any point last season. That is more strikeouts last night than any game last year. And here's the two things I'll tell you. One, and we can complain about the offense all we want. If you watch the game, Zach Gallen was unbelievable. He is one of the best pitchers in the National League, and last night his breaking stuff was incredible. Now, the Yankees have terrible approach to the game. They have a lot of young kids. Like you, Dominguez was completely overmatched. We've watched Dominguez, what was it, 9 games in 23, the however many games last year, and now the early part of this year, hitting a home run against Corbin Burns last night. I have never seen Dominguez, and again, it's not a ton of at-bats, but I have never seen Dominguez completely outmatched. That knuckle curve, he would have swung, if Zach Gallen threw it every pitch, he was swinging at it every pitch. We even saw the last at-bat of the game, he swings over a breaking ball. Last night was just one of those nights. Dominguez, I don't know if it's the weather, I don't know if seeing so many breaking balls of that quality, he was swinging at everything. You've got Rice, who's hit the ball extremely hard, hit one in the upper deck the other day. At the end of the game, like, he's had really good at-bats. He looked overmatched. Jazz, you know, after having an incredible series against Milwaukee, has been shut down these last 2 days. Judge hasn't, despite the single in the ninth, hasn't done anything. But you look at this, like, last night, it was a terrible approach. But sometimes, and I know this might come off as an apology, like, sometimes you just got to tip your cap. Zach Gallen is an incredible pitcher, and he was putting everything where he wanted. He was able to throw that knuckle curve for strikes at the bottom of the zone, and then he was able to get it for the wipeout swing and miss in the dirt. Like, he was able to locate his fastball on both sides, up and down. He did whatever he wanted to do. Boone said it in the postgame that you'll look back on the season and point to like a couple games where you saw an excellent pitcher dominate. Last night was one of them. Gallen was unbelievable. So I'm okay with kind of like wiping it clean a little bit. It doesn't change that over the last 2 days when they're facing Corbin Burns and Zach Gallen, clearly the offense still struggles. And that we're not going to see these submarine, torpedo bats just absolutely dominate the Yankee offense and suddenly thrust them into a category where they're the best offense in baseball. Like, that was always stupid. It's stupid today. It was stupid then. It's stupid now. And looking at this team, you knew there was going to be, you know, some issues when you're relying on young players like this. But to me, I'm easily wiping this one away. I think it's one of those nights where you just got dominated by one of the better pitchers in the game. Plain and simple. They didn't have a great approach. They swung. Eventually, you should stop swinging. Like, with the breaking ball, if it looks like it's in the zone, leave it alone. Like, there should have been a better approach, and they're going to need to put the ball in play, and they do have some swing and miss in their game, clearly, when your best hitter is Judge, and he has so much swing and miss in his game. Like, you're going to have that. But I wipe this thing away and just go, hey, listen, that's what makes the other night so frustrating. That's what I take away from this game. When I left this game, when I turned off the game, when they're getting beat 4-0 for most of it, what bothers me the most is last night, or 2 nights ago, rather, when they had a win, when it was Will Warren against Corbin Burns. They hit two home runs off of Burns. They get a lucky break with a terrible error from first base at Naylor, with Naylor. They take a 4-2 lead into the eighth. That's a game you're supposed to win. Then you're not so bothered by last night because you got shut down by Zach Gallen, and you'll live with it, and you have a chance to still win the series tonight instead of now trying to salvage the last game of the series and not have a 500 homestand to start the year when you dominated the first three games. It's going to be frustrating if the Yankees are 3-3 heading on the road to Pittsburgh after dominating the first three games of the year in the manner they did. You don't want to get swept here. This is a big game for Cookie Carrasco, as much as it can be a big game. I don't want to get swept. I don't want to be 500. 4-2 sounds the Mets, right? It was 3-3 sounds a hell of a lot better than 2-4. Well, I'll tell you this right now. 4-2 sounds a hell of a lot better than 3-3. But what bothers me is the other night. You want to put those wins in your pocket. And I heard Evan and Tiki talking about what kind of loss is worse. The loss where you're just lifeless and the game quietly goes away, or the loss where you get your heart broken by the bullpen. Like, would I rather watch my team strike out 16 times? And I know Volpe hits the home run in the ninth, and we'll get to all that. But I would much rather have last night's loss where they're just ice cold. Zach Gallen is mowing them down. They strike out 16 times. And it's just one of those ugly games where they get beat, as opposed to blowing a 4-2 lead in the eighth. Like, it's not even close. That one frustrates me a hell of a lot more than last night does. Last night they got beat. You tipped the cap. And then the other talking point from this game, I got to be honest, Call me crazy. Bravo. I got to be honest. Bravo to Carlos Rodon. I was impressed with his start. I got to be totally honest with you. Is it a good start? Not a good start. Can't give up four runs in the first two innings and call it a good start. But we have seen Carlos Rodon over his Yankee tenure, the year and a half he's been pitching for the New York Yankees, where those two innings of four runs leads to three innings of seven runs. That's just the bottom line. He had nothing in the first two innings. He was throwing a 91, 92 mile an hour fastball. He had no idea where the slider was going. He gives up the home run to Gurriel in the first inning on a 0-2 high fastball because he's only throwing at 92, 93, and you're not going to sneak it by anybody at that number. Then he has the disaster that is the second inning. And I thought for sure, oh, geez, here comes, they still got eight more games. Devin Williams isn't here tonight. They got seven more games after this one in a row. The bullpen's going to have to be in the third inning. It's going to be, not only are they going to lose this game, but it's going to set them up poorly for tomorrow. It's going to be set them up poorly for the weekend series. Like, this is just, I mean, it sucks to have bad Rodon. This is the nature of Carlos Rodon. And instead, he struggles at the start of the third inning. He gets that double play from Naylor to get him out of that jam. And then he was a different pitcher, 4, 5, and 6, and was able to go six innings. So I'm not throwing parades for it. I'm not telling you that Carlos Rodon is a great pitcher and I have no fears of him, or that I trust him now in a big game, or I'll trust him the next time that he has a lousy first two innings that he can turn it around and give you a good start. I'm just telling you, he has had two starts, and I can honestly say that in both of those starts, I have seen something from Carlos Rodon that I haven't seen before. Opening day, I thought, was his best pitching performance in a Yankee uniform. He was getting ahead with breaking balls. He was throwing the changeup 2-3 times in a row to keep batters off balance. He was locating the slider in the zone and below the zone for the swing and miss strikeout. Like, he was getting, what was it, 13 swings on his slider and 9 swing and misses. He was dominant. He had good stuff. He had a good pitch mix. He just looked like an overall really good pitcher with a plan, where so often we see him as just, he's going to go out there and try and throw it past you and then fool you with a slider. That's it. And instead, he was dealing on opening day, dealing with a good pitch mix. And then this game, terrible to start, had absolutely nothing, and still found a way to go six innings and only give up those four runs and retire the last 10 batters of the game. Not good enough, not what you need from him, right? You're going to need better from him and more consistent from him, especially with the injuries to the pitching staff. But I got to tell you, as a Yankee fan, 5 games into this season, and I'm still looking for net positives, and I'm trying to find out who this team is, and what I can get from players, and what I can trust from players, and what I can, the spots I can put players in and find out who they are. I got to tell you, the first two starts of the year from Carlos Rodon, I feel a hell of a lot better about him than I did last year, or any other point in a Yankee uniform. He's got more pitches. He's more comfortable with the changeup. He was able to really pitch instead of just throw. And then he was on the ropes last night, on the absolute ropes against a very good Diamondback team that has a very good chance, despite being in the division they're in, for being a postseason team. They scored the most runs in the league last year. They threw Corbin Burnes and Gallen at them in these first two games. And this is a really good offense. And he had absolutely nothing the first two innings, made a big pitch to get out of the third, and then went on cruise control and dominated. That is unlike anything we have seen from Carlos Rodon. So it's not good enough. He's part of the reason they lost the game. To me, he's not the reason. You've got to score more runs and you can't swing and miss. You can't strike out 16 times in a game and expect to win. They got absolutely dominated. But I got to tell you, Carlos Rodon, I felt pretty damn good about him after this game. I know many people are going to crap on him. I know I was getting it. People hit me up. Oh, here we go. Bad Rodon. Same crap. Inconsistent. This is the guy we're going to trust at the top of the rotation. This is a joke. Okay. All right. Those are all still fair points. I can't tell you he's not the Carlos Rodon of last year. I can't tell you that I know for sure he's not the guy who's going to spit the bit in a big spot. I can't tell you for sure that he's not someone you can't trust on a start-to-start basis because he's still those guys. It's only been two starts. But how many times have we seen this game get out of control and the bullpen is throwing in the third, fourth inning? How many times have we seen it? And maybe it didn't help them win this game, but maybe it helps them win tomorrow. Maybe it helps them win over the weekend. Innings are important. And the idea that he got off to such a miserable start and had nothing, it would be one thing if he made one mistake and gave up a three-run home run. Right? It would be one thing if it looked like he had good stuff and he just got beat, you know, an error, a home run, and it's 4-0 in the second. Like, he had nothing. He couldn't put anything where he wanted to. And his fastball was 91-92 on a cold night in the Bronx. And then he got a big double play in the third and went into cruise control and dominated, found it, had nothing and found it, and went through that lineup for 10 straight and got them through the sixth and set them up better for tomorrow and moving forward. So to me, we'll talk a lot about the offense, which is the main reason they lost this game, the approach this offense had, being shut down by Gallen, what we can expect from them moving forward. They're not as bad as they were last night. They're not as good as they were against Milwaukee. We all know that. But to me, coming out of this game, I got to tell you, I felt really good about Carlos Rodon. I felt really good about him. That was a positive start for me because it felt like they weren't going to win no matter who was starting or how well he pitched. And ultimately, I thought he did a really good job. And bouncing back like that and going six, I take a – if it's Max Fried, I'm annoyed by it. If it's you know, Gerrit Cole, it's not good enough. And even with Carlos Rodon, it's not good enough. But we have seen so much of him completely unravel and fall apart that against a really good offense that led the league in runs last year, for him to say, okay, this far but no further – and then to go 10 in a row, I got to tell you, you could say whatever you want. We could say it's not good enough. Carlos Rodon did a really nice job.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Midi Health. At any given time, 61% of adult women say they want to lose weight. But for many, that's easier said than done. If you've had trouble losing weight, don't lose hope. Midi Health uses a deep understanding of women's hormones and a combination of weight loss medications to create a customized plan for each user. Midi Health can help you achieve more effective and sustainable weight loss by addressing hormone imbalances. Midi can also prescribe proven weight loss medications that help you experience reduced appetite and increased feelings of fullness. When paired with hormone optimization, you're not just managing your weight, you're also supporting your body's natural processes, which means you can overcome those weight loss plateaus that in the past have been so difficult to move beyond. So if you're ready to combine the power of hormones with the power of weight loss medications, visit joinmidi.com today. Discover how this innovative approach can lead you to lasting success. That's joinmidi.com.
Hey everyone, quick shout out to Whole Foods Market. You know I'm all about eating fresh and finding quality ingredients, and that's exactly what Whole Foods delivers. Whether you're grabbing organic produce, high quality meats, or just a quick healthy snack, they've got you covered. Plus, they're all about sustainability and supporting local farmers, which I love. Next time you're grocery shopping, check them out. You'll taste the difference. Spring is the perfect time to refresh your table, and Whole Foods Market has everything you need. Hosting brunch? Picture this. Flaky, buttery quiche, crispy bacon, fresh berries, and of course, cold-pressed orange juice to brighten up your morning. And if you're in the mood for something fizzy, check out their seasonal Italian sodas. Berry Blend and Orange Hibiscus are total must-tries. So whether you're planning a casual get-together or a full-on feast, Whole Foods Market has you covered. Make Whole Foods Market your destination for all spring gatherings.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. Whether you're going smooth-shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Visit DollarShaveClub.com and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more.